Your opponents will point to bail reform and how it was done and judicial discretion, and that is an aspect of keeping people on the street even when they do bad things with guns, and that could be part of the problem.
I don't see why we shouldn't. Starting with when President Clinton took office, up until the third year of the Trump administration, crime and violent crime in this country had gone down precipitously. The only thing that changed, and it was always, the cities were always run by Democrats, was the Trump presidency, who was a lawless president who promoted lawlessness. And I think that, and I hope.
What about the liberal reforms? I mean, look, a lot of this is going to hang on New York's shoulders.
I don't think, I'm not a criminologist, but, when under Obama and under Clinton, we had precipitous drops in violent crime in this country. And, some of these things are going to have to be looked at, but I think the idea we're going to defund the police and not support the police would put the rest in New York City. Remember, this is a New York Democratic primary. So there's a lot of blame to go around, but Biden can get his numbers up from 38% because, he was instrumental in helping reduce.
But remember, Eric Adams is a former cop who went against the Democratic mentality of letting everybody out of prison. Part of it was COVID, but a lot of it wasn't. It was bail reform. Some of it was good. Some of it was overreach.
Extraordinary. The Democratic mentality of letting everyone out of prison. Which, I mean, is Chris Cuomo writing a Republican attack ad?
Yeah, no, that sounds like a Republican attack ad. That's just nuts that the Democratic mentality is to let everybody out of prison.
He's talking about the state where his own brother is the governor as well, which is very funny. Oh man. And it's what's so funny about that last part of the segment is the fact that like Carville is actually, trying to pivot away from this a little bit. And Cuomo just keeps returning with the same talking point. He's like, but what about the liberal reforms?
Yeah, and of course his example, really the only example he's given, unless I missed one, was bail reform, which has literally like nothing. I mean, the only sense in which that lets anybody out of not prison, because if bail is an issue, prison is for when you've actually been convicted of crimes. Anybody's been bailed out has not been convicted of anything yet, bail reform, or even like what really should happen, the outright abolition of cash bail, doesn't. I mean, the only sense in which it lets people, it means that you don't have, like, whether or not you're sitting in jail is no longer dependent on whether you can afford this, which you'd think, like, look, if somebody, prosecutors can make a case that somebody is a flight risk or they're going to commit, imminent more violent crimes or whatever, they're not eligible for bail. But like, it's a really grotesque argument that, that's like, okay, well, we should just like have poverty keep people in jail, and that like that's the best way to minimize, violent offenders being out on the street.
It's funny. I feel like there's a pejorative stereotype that people have around podcasts and around YouTube, around, about how too many of them are just people sitting around talking and they haven't really done much preparation. I mean, we watch a segment like this, and I mean, how much are these guys getting paid for this? How much does Chris Cuomo earn a year? Did he do any preparation for this segment beyond, reading like, 100 words of text or whatever? It seems like he knew exactly what he was going to say, before coming in. Carville just seems to be kind of riffing as well. That's just pulling out numbers. Sure, 15%. Why not? I mean, do these people not have whole staffs that, vet stuff and vet information and brief them on this stuff? It's extraordinary.
No, absolutely. I mean, Carville actually sounds even less prepared than Cuomo. I mean, Carville, just sort of does that. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a criminologist. What do I know about this stuff? and Cuomo sounds more prepared than that. But I mean, like, it's literally like he just, he's not saying anything here that your uncle wouldn't say in a Facebook argument. because like he'd sort of vaguely had an impression from some Fox segments that he watched a while ago that, you know, that like Democrats are going crazy and letting people out of prison.
That's right. I mean, he's just, you know, he's, it's like exactly that kind of like, you know, Thanksgiving dinner conversation that makes everyone roll their eyes, but just said with the conviction of a guy who makes seven figures to do it on TV, you know?
Yeah, this is amazing. All right, let's finish this up.
And he campaigned against it.
But Chris, that's 15 or 20% of the Democratic Party.
20%?
Yeah, 15 to 20.
Our party are blacks and suburban women. They're not into this. All right? And you know, again, we're seeing it time and time again. We're letting a noisy wing of our party define the rest of us. And my point is, we can't do that. I think these people are all are kind of nice people. I think they're very naive, and they're all into language and identity. And that's all right. They're not storming the Capitol, but they're not winning elections. And I think people sort of see us for what it is. And people are way more interested in their lives and how to improve them than they are in somebody else's pronoun or something. So I agree that it's a problem, but it shouldn't be as big a problem as it is, because they know where near as big in the Democratic Party as the fringes are in the Republican Party. And that's something we got to drive home.
James Carville, you're always value added. Appreciate you.
Is he?
Wow. And you know, just true to form, every segment like this always has to have, there always has to be some, you got to throw trans people under the bus at some point. That's a rule of this kind of segment.
Yeah, right. That we were talking, the whole thing was about crime and police reform and bail reform. But like somehow for like a second at the end, it's about pronouns out of nowhere. which is just, yeah. And again, like what do these things have to do with each other? Not very much. And you know, he says, Carville says, towards the end there, time and time again, you know, we see this, and this really gets into the heart of your piece, because Carville has a long history of singing some variation, at least, of this tune.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And this is kind of why I think, I mean, apart from the fact that the segment itself and the analysis contained therein is not particularly serious. I mean, I think this is kind of why the thrust of my piece avoided any kind of granular analysis of the arguments being made, because I really think that what this is and how it should be understood is just kind of resurrection of a type of argument that became very fashionable in certain circles in the 1980s, and then conquered the Democratic Party and became a sort of piece of really mainstream, received political wisdom afterwards. And this is, you know, and there's an exact same trajectory with the same people in Great Britain as well. With the Blairites. There is a cosmology of politics that these people extracted, that they take to kind of be an eternal one. That they got out of a handful of election victories by centrists like Bill Clinton and Tony Blair in the 1990s. Big part of that cosmology is that you win by fighting and scolding and disciplining the left. The old center left, the story goes, was afflicted with these crazies of various kinds, people with these strange and chaotic and radical causes that alienated the only kind of voters that matter, which are the ones in the, you know, the kind of mushy, ill-defined, you know, itself very caricatured sort of sensible middle. So the so-called cranks are obviously a caricature, but in many ways, so is this, wise centrist constituency that's always being courted as well. In the 1980s, this was about the Democratic Party repudiating the coalition Jesse Jackson had tried to build and kind of replacing it with one that was much more dominated by suburban voters, kind of higher income voters, in the suburbs especially. And which really made really kind of declared open season on you know, anything that could be caricatured as kind of radical or extreme. And even just on the idea of activists in general, it's amazing how, you know, unspecified activists are often kind of the bogeyman in this sort of caricature. And it's an especially extraordinary thing to conclude from the 1992 election. And, you know, this is hardly an original point on my part, but Ross Perot got something like 19% of the popular vote in 92, meaning that Bill Clinton won the presidency. I mean, considerable margin in the Electoral College because Perot didn't carry a single state. But I mean, Bill Clinton got 43% of the vote. And 2 years after that, in the midterms, the Democratic Party lost control of the House of Representatives. I mean, this was the Gingrich Revolution. Democrats lost control of the House for the first time, I believe, since 1953. So this, you know, indomitable coalition that was going to be the basis for, you know, the Democratic politics moving forward, really was not very resilient at all. So, I mean, there are all kinds of reasons to conclude that this is just not a good strategy, but and you know, also that the ways that the argument in its favor are made are not very coherent. But just, you know, even if I'm a centrist consultant or something trying to advise Democrats, I would, you know, caution against extrapolating too much from an election like 1992.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. It's also, you know, worth noting that, I mean, if you go back to that election, in some ways, Bill Clinton was running, you know, as the third way triangulator. I mean, that was definitely all there, you know, if you read like his and Gore's campaign book, Putting People First. But like, that wasn't really what the stump speech was, right? Like in a lot of ways, like Clinton was actually, you know, like it was the election was happening during a recession, and, you know, and he was sounding some, like, at least by 1992 standards, somewhat populist, like, rhetorical notes, you know, back then, right? So, I mean, it's not even that in any sort of clean way, you know, he ran on that. And in any case, as you say, right, like, he also got 43% of the vote and lost the midterm. So, like, you know, this is just a weird, like, thing to, you know, this, yeah, it's a very weird thing to put too much emphasis on. It's also really interesting that Carville doesn't, you know, I do think if all this had happened, like if this exact interview had happened, you know, 10 years earlier somehow, Carville probably wouldn't have had to do that. I don't know. I'm not a criminologist, you know, like I don't think he would have had to quite, you know, to quite like punt on the whole question quite that much. I think what he would have said is I'm not going to try to do the Carville accent, but what he would have said is hey, when Bill Clinton was in office, you know, he got tough on crime. You know, he, what are you talking about? The Democratic, you know, let everybody out of prison mentality. You know, he passed the crime bill. He put however many cops on the streets. You know, he had, you know, he beefed up mandatory minimums. Like that would have definitely been what Carville would have been selling now, been selling then. But he can't really do that now because, like, he doesn't quite want to admit that about the Clinton history. But he also can't say the thing that, like, you should say, that, like, as that progressives at least should say, which is, hey, you want to reduce crime, reduce poverty, you know, and here's how we'll do that. For obvious reasons, Carville's also not going to say that. I mean, that's part of the agenda that he's lumping in, you know, with this, you know, defund the police and language police left. So all that really leaves him with as an option is just say, well, I don't know. Crime seemed to go down under Clinton and Obama. So, you know, must be something about having Democrats in there. I'm not a criminologist.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, you know, as with, you know, so much of kind of the 90s centrist shtick, which these people are still doing, you know, it has to do with framing the question as one, like, everything is about electability and strategy, right? Like, you know, like there's less of it. People like Carville, I mean, I agree with what you just said, but I think it's always been the case that people like Carville have tended to prefer, you know, they don't like staking out clear positions on issues. They prefer to frame it as like, look, there are just certain ways to that you win in politics. And those always, you know, guess what? Those preclude the, you know, pursuing the kinds of policies that are disliked by the donors we court and, you know, the conservative primary candidates whose victories we do our utmost to ensure at every turn and all the rest of it. You know, this kind of, you know, triangulation, you know, justified by these, you know, strategists who appear on TV constantly. And I think have really appeared on TV with increasing frequency since the early 1990s. I mean, it's very much about masking, you know, these, you know, important ideological and policy questions behind this kind of, I don't know, this kind of mystical kind of veneer, you know, and a big part, I think, of Carville's whole mythos and his, you know, popularity and valence as a brand on cable TV in particular has to do with that very thing.
You have been watching a free public preview for a Patreon exclusive episode of Give Them an Argument. To get the rest of this episode, plus Patreon exclusive episodes every single Thursday, as well as Patreon exclusive post games after the regular show every Monday night, and a lot more, head over to patreon.com/BenBurgess. As a friend of mine used to put it, why be foolish?